take just a moment before we begin this lesson. I think they are trying to get it ready to be booted up on the screen. Hopefully somebody back there will give me a signal when we're ready for that. We are ready. Oh, perfect. Shifting gears a little bit. Because what we're going to find out is the lesson that is about the men is not really even remotely similar to the lesson about the women, and that is because we're going to find that the needs are considerably different. And as God gives commands in Ephesians chapter 5, we indicated, I think it's very important, critically important, to understand that the reason he gives different commands is because there are different needs involved with the two. If husbands needed love, and that was their most pervasive need, then that's what he would command the wives to do. And it's not that he doesn't command wives at all to love their husbands. When older women are taught to teach the younger women, one of the things they're taught to teach the younger women is to love their husbands. It isn't that they're not supposed to have any love toward their husbands, but I think what he's doing in Ephesians 5 is saying that there is a difference, a real difference, in the pervasive need of men versus the pervasive need in women. And when God created male, he created him differently. He created him differently as far as the way he thinks, the way he processes information. And so because of that, he's going to give women different commands than he gives the men. So as we think about, you know, wives don't typically think, what does he want from me anyway? She's thinking in terms, one of the most common things I hear from women is, he is so needy. You know, just what is it that he needs? I don't understand what it is that he needs. And you might hear that more than any other time because of the way that men react toward illness. You know, wives will talk frequently about that. She can be ill and having to still take care of the kids in the house and everything else, and he seems to be sometimes oblivious to that. But I teased my son about this just a little, not too long back. We're over visiting him. And his wife, and we just laughed along with his wife because he had cut his finger, and you would have thought he'd cut it off, you know, watching him react. But I looked at it, it was a nick, a little chunk of skin taken out of it, but he's laying on the couch. It was his thumb, not his finger. He's laying on the couch holding it up in the air as if that's the only way he could possibly get relief. And so we laughed about that because a man gets a cold and he may lay in bed and moan and groan, women will tell you. I'm not saying that's typical of all men, but I'm saying we react sometimes differently. And wives think, you know, he's so needy in that respect. What is it that he needs now? And she's trying to fulfill those needs. What we're going to find out is that when we're dealing with men, wives are going to need to understand that they're driven, where she's driven to feel security or need security, men are driven to achieve simplicity in life. And God has created them that way. God created the male to be the provider, to be the head, to be the one that needed to succeed at different things in life. And so he has a very providing, succeeding drive in his life. And because of that, in order to feel that he needs to succeed, he needs to be able to feel that he is accomplished. And to do that, he strives for simplicity. I'm not saying men are simple-minded, you know, in case wives are thinking, oh, he's got my husband pegged. I'm not saying he's simple-minded. I'm saying he's processing information differently than the wife does. And he does that even physiologically, and I don't think that that is without cause. You can do the studies on the brain and understand that membrane that is between the right and left half of the brain that continues to exist in women does not continue to exist. It dissipates in men and goes away. And so men have a tendency to think from the right side of their brain more frequently than they do the left, and much more frequently than they do simultaneously with both. Women think with both. They think with the emotionally driven side of the brain as well as the logic side of the brain. Men have a tendency to be driven by the right side of the brain. I think God has created us that way because he said it is your job to be the provider, to be the one who succeeds here in leading this family. And so he's working with the side of the brain that is driven towards success. Men process information differently. I mentioned that whole conversation about the woman, you know, asking the woman how was work today. That comes from a book written by Bill and Pam Farrell. Bill and Pam Farrell wrote a book. You know, there are a lot of analogy books out there. You know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I picked up one in Florida I thought was interesting. It said, men are like clams, women are like crowbars. You know, so you read some of them, you think that's some pretty interesting analogies here, and you can imagine what that one was about. I mean, she's spending all her time trying to pry him open. The one that interested me, not when I first saw it, I thought, oh, here's another one of those silly analogies, don't really want to read it. It was by Bill and Pam Farrell. It's called Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. And I thought, this just doesn't seem to make any sense at all, what he's talking about. It had the single best chapter on communication between a husband and wife that I had ever read from a purely practical standpoint. And it said, you know, when we talked about spaghetti, women are like spaghetti, that conversation that we had, he challenges in that book. He says, look at a plate of spaghetti. He says, pick the end of one noodle with your eyes and visually follow it to its other end. He says, you can't do it. You will seamlessly switch from noodle to noodle without ever realizing that you have done that. And that's exactly the way her mind is processing information and carrying on conversation, because it is all connected. And to her, it's all connected. It doesn't work that way for us. I was telling someone last night, Judy and I got in the car just about 2 weeks ago. We start a conversation, or she started the conversation. As we're in the car, we just started to take off. It was really the first real conversation we'd had that day, other than, you know, good morning, I love you, that kind of stuff. She started the conversation this way. She says, you remember when they, and then she went on to finish that line, because it didn't matter what was following it, because I was already lost. I said, you can't start the first conversation of the day with a pronoun. Who are they? I don't even know who they are. She says, you remember they, and she went on to talk about it. She says, don't you remember when we were driving yesterday, we were talking about so-and-so, and I thought, are you kidding me? I'm supposed to wake up this morning understanding this conversation is a continuation of yesterday's conversation. I don't process that way. She does. To her, that was, and the scary thing is, I know she's got some girlfriends. If we'd have had some of them in the car, she could have said, you remember they, and they would have all understood where she was going. She processes different. He says, men are like waffles in the sense that if you look down at a waffle, there's a series of boxes. That's what you're looking at. And we process life in this series of boxes. And we want to be in one box at a time. That's the nature of simplicity. Because I can solve one box at a time, and that's why I stay in that one box. Social scientists call this compartmentalizing. That's the way men process information. We compartmentalize it. Why? Because I can be successful when I compartmentalize. If I've got every box in my life open at one time, that doesn't work for men, because I don't see how I can succeed in that. And so I want to stay in one box, and that's the way we process information. I think most wives would understand that. It's why, if your husband's in the TV box, in other words, he's watching TV. It's what allows you to say something to him, and you think he's totally ignoring you. He's not ignoring you. He's in the TV box. You have to get him out of the TV box before you can talk to him about whatever it is you want to talk to him about. Or the reading box, or the tinkering box, or whatever it is that he's in. The hardest thing for women to understand, men have a box that has nothing in it. And he likes to go there sometimes. It's his way of getting downtime. Wives, I know you've asked your men, you look at him sometimes, you think, what are you thinking? Now he knows, I can't say nothing, because I've tried that before. If I say nothing, she's not going to believe me. She doesn't, but that's the truth. He tries to figure out, what box can I jump into? What box has the closest proximity that I can jump into so that she won't think I'm trying to fool her? We have a box that has nothing in it, and we can just go there. It's our way of processing or getting downtime, because not everything is connected. And so men are driven toward this simplicity. And if women understand that, then it helps them to understand how it is that I'm going to process information. We have a class on communication sometimes where we talk about two things that are important. If the wife starts the conversation, the man needs to follow the lead. That means jumping on a train, you're taking a journey. That's what I tell them. And that scares men for two reasons. One, we don't know where the train's going. Secondly, we don't know if the train's ever stopping. We're very, very cautious about jumping on that train. We get afraid of that. But trying to get women to understand as well. If a man starts a conversation, he wants to stay in the box that he opened up. That's where he will. And so if he brings up a particular financial issue, or he brings up a child issue, he doesn't want to touch all the boxes that are tangent to that. He wants to deal with the one thing he brought up, because he's looking to solve. Where women are looking to connect, men are looking to solve. That's why when a woman brings up a conversation, men have this is the incoming transmission. Houston, we have a problem. Because he figures, if there wasn't a problem, why would you be bringing up conversation? There's something we ought to be solving here. You know, I got myself in a world of trouble that way lots of times when we had toddlers at home, and I'd get home and Judy would say, this is what the boys did today. Well, what my viewpoint of that always was, why would you tell me that if you weren't looking for me to help you solve that? So I would say, here's what you should have said, here's what you should have done. That was not nearly as effective as I thought it would be when I was presenting that. She was looking to connect. She just wanted to connect. I was looking to solve. Men are looking for that kind of simplicity, and that's because God created them that way. He created us to be the one who is the lead, the one who is driven to succeed, to provide in life. And so the commands to the wife are different than they are to the husband. What is it that he tells the wife? The godly wife, he gives two different commands to, really. It says in verse 22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. That's a great word. It just means to line up under. It's a willingness to yield to somebody. It has nothing to do with equality. We understand that. 1 Corinthians 11 says that God is the head of Christ. That's not an equality issue because John says in John 1:1 that Christ was God. He has absolute total deity. That wasn't the issue. But they had different roles. Wife has a different role than a husband. The reason is because the same as the church is subject to Christ. Why? Because you can't have multiple heads driving one body. You have one head driving all the parts of the body. That's the way it needs to function. God has set up the home the same way. He says, wives, submit to, because there can only be one head of the household, and then there can be those that submit to that headship. So she is to submit to line up under, to yield herself to. But I want us to focus more on the second thing that he says to her. In verse 33, when he's saying, nevertheless, you still do what you're supposed to do. Look what he says. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. I think that's interesting. He says, wives, you need to respect your husband. If you were going to use one word to describe the love that a husband is to have for his wife because of the love that Christ has for the church, one word that might be all-encompassing of that, what word might you choose? Think of some words that might apply to that. I'm sorry, what? The sacrificial is absolutely a great word to describe the love. Unconditional seems to even be a broader word, doesn't it? It's just across the board. Unconditional love. And we would agree with that. Christ loves us unconditionally, doesn't he? If you ask the husbands, when you're looking at Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 25, what's the first if-then clause given to the husbands, starting in verse 25? Just scan that for a second. Find me the first if-then clause. Remember those from school? If this, then this. There's a problem with this exercise, isn't there? The problem is what? There are no if-then clauses. Nowhere in that passage does he say, husbands, if your wife acts this way, then you love her. If she does this, then you love her. That has nothing to do with the issue. There are no if-then clauses. I'm to love my wife because she's my wife and because that's what God tells me to do. It's the same as being a Christian. God says, Mark, you know what? Love people if. Is that what he says? Treat people kindly if. He says, no. If you're a Christian, you do these things because you're a Christian. It's your responsibility. It isn't contingent on what the other person does. But it's interesting because we accept that very readily regarding love. Unconditional love is a concept that fits in our mind very well. But the thing that we think about respect is, if I were to ask you to fill in this line, I think you'd have no difficulty. Respect must be what? Earned. Where is that in the scriptures? That respect must be earned. You know, if somebody says, you know what? I don't think that's what he's saying. I think the Ephesians 5 verse 33 says, wives, unconditionally respect your husbands. It is his role and it is your response to his role. God's not saying that you like everything he does any more than he's saying, I like everything that my wife does, but I still love her. I think he's saying to the wives, you unconditionally respect because he is the husband. That doesn't mean you submit to things that are ungodly. Peter says we've got to obey God rather than man. I would tell you that's across the board. Never does God ask you to submit to a relationship where somebody asks you to violate his will. That's not the issue. I used to drive my parents' car sometimes when I was about 16. My dad was in the military and was an officer in the military. And because he was an officer in the military, he had a little sticker that went on the front of our car that indicated he was an officer. And I always thought that was kind of amusing because I'm the 16-year-old kid just starting driving. We would drive out to the Air Force base, and as I'm approaching the Air Force base, maybe by myself or one of my friends in the car or something, the guy standing at the gate, the airman there, would snap to attention and salute me the whole time I'm coming through. And when I'd pass by, he'd snap off that salute to me. I'm a 16-year-old kid. And I thought that was pretty amusing. So I'd snap a salute back to him. I know he wished he could have drawn his weapon, but he didn't. Why did he do that? Because I deserved some kind of respect? No, because it was the car of an officer, and he understood you demonstrate respect because of what it is. It doesn't matter the behavior of the person that is in. That's not the issue. I would tell you, since I have been old enough to vote, there have been presidents that I have liked, presidents that I've disliked, presidents that I've liked a lot, presidents that I've disliked a lot. But I would hope that I am the kind of person that whether it was a president I liked or didn't like, that if he walked into the room, that I would demonstrate the respect for the office that he holds. Now, I may talk to him about personal beliefs and all kinds of things, but because he is president, the office demands or commands a certain amount of respect. And I think that's what he's saying in a husband's role. Wives, unconditionally respect your husbands. When we first started doing these series, there was a tendency for me to think that men were falling short of their role much more than women were. I no longer even feel that way. Not only do I think that it's not something that we need to teach, but I don't think that that's even the truth. I think there are as many women who are doing things that husbands find disrespectful as there are husbands doing things that women find unloving. What happens is, I do things that my wife thinks is unloving, not because I don't want to love her, but because I don't think that they're unloving. If I did, I wouldn't do them. I mean, I have to have her believing that I'm not the kind of person that's just saying, I know this is an unloving thing to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. No, I don't understand sometimes how she perceives that and what is reality to her. And so as I'm learning in that process, then I try to be more and more loving. I think the same things. Things that she would never, you'd say, do you respect your husband? Absolutely, I respect my husband. Well, how do you behave? There are things that we do that demonstrate that we may not be as respectful as we think that we are. And that's what we want to look at, just three things that I think men look to for respect in their lives. And women need to think in terms of the things they say and the things they do, because men sometimes feel they're not being respected in their role. And that's very detrimental to that relationship. She's looking to demonstrate respect. Now, she gives love. Wives are wonderful at giving love. Why? Because we kind of fulfill our own need. The whole basis of, if you've ever read Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages, he talks about that. We're supplying what we want or what we need. We have a tendency to do that. In the Waffles and Spaghetti book, Bill Farrell talks about we're spending all our time trying to pour syrup on her spaghetti while she's trying to pour marinara sauce on our waffle. And that's the way. And unless you're Elf, syrup on spaghetti doesn't belong. But I guess if you're Elf, it does. We are. We're trying to give them what we need sometimes, and that's not the issue. God said, if I get married, then what my role is to fulfill that other person. I understand it's to fulfill God and to please God first. But I'm seeking not to fulfill myself in marriage, but how do I provide the complement to my spouse, because that's what my role is, for me to be the kind of husband, hers is for her to be the kind of wife. Three things that he's looking for that demonstrate that respect. First, he's asking you these three questions, really. Is life with you going to be an expression of confidence? Does he feel that you are confident in him? And where is he looking for that? What kinds of things is it that he is seeing in that? I would tell you, you can see some of these things as to how important they are to a man in different ways. Let me ask you this. Two men meet for the first time. Most commonly, the first question is going to be what? Any of you men, you meet another man, what do you typically ask first? What do you do for a living? Isn't that just the most common thing? Why? Why is it? Women rarely meet each other and say, hey, what do you do? Women meet each other and what do they want to talk about? It may be kids. It may be other people. It's going to be relationship-oriented conversation normally. Men are going to be performance, some kind of task-oriented conversation. What is it that you do? Why? Because that's where he finds his respect. He's looking that you might appreciate his desire to achieve, his desire to work, his desire to accomplish in life. That's what causes him to ask that. Here's a scenario where I tell you, a woman thought she was offering the absolute perfect answer. Her husband came home from work. He said, "Honey, I've got bad news. I lost my job today. I got laid off." She responded, "Honey, that's okay. We've got each other. That's all that really matters." Now, I tell you, that sounds like a very loving thing to say. But I can tell you, there are very few men that are going to respond well to, "It's okay that you lost your job." I understand what she means by that. And she would never perceive that as disrespectful. But what a man is saying, "No, it is not okay that I lost my job. My security is tied very directly to my job." It's why men have difficulty with retirement sometimes. They lose identity when they lose their ability to work and achieve. And that's the way God created us. If all of a sudden I feel like I am not providing for my family, that is a significant thing to me. I understand she's just trying to offer comfort in a situation like that. But she needs to understand he's not looking for love. He knows she loves him. He knows she's going to stand by his side. He typically doesn't doubt those things. But he's lost an integral part of his life. You need to express that in him. Show him that you really appreciate his desire to achieve, his desire to work. And we'll talk about a couple of ways to do that in a moment. Secondly, appreciate his desire to protect, to provide, to take care of. He wants to do that. And when a wife expresses to her husband how much she appreciates that, then he feels very respected in that relationship. He understands that it means something to her. You need to appreciate his desire to lead. Now, that's not always easy. You know, that's the idea of submission in willfully yielding myself. There are times that I have led in our relationship where I would have been better off following her suggestion than mine. There's no question about that. And yet, when it came down to finally, I'm making a decision and we're going to go a certain direction, to my wife's credit, she yields masterfully and follows in that way. And again, you understand, we're not talking about in a violation of God's law. We're talking about a lot of the other decisions that are made in marriage. But she submits. And the fact that she is willing to follow my lead rather than buck against my lead allows me to feel respected. And he says that the same way that the church, when we think about our relationship to Christ, I have to tell you, I mean, I wish I could say I understand everything God's asked me to do. I don't. But I have to tell you, he's not real concerned really with whether I understand everything he's ever told me to do. I don't understand why he chose some of the things he did. I feel like Naaman sometimes. Seriously? Why the Jordan River? Why? I don't understand that. Why dip 7 times in the Jordan River? It isn't an issue of whether I understand him or not. My relationship as part of God's church to him is to yield to him. Why? Because I know he is in the position of lead, and therefore I yield because he's in the position of lead. And what does that do? That demonstrates respect. I love the story of Jesus when he goes and talks to the disciples. You remember, they've been fishing all night long? I used to fish a lot in Florida. Grew up on the water. Spent most of every summer, all day, every day on the water somewhere, fishing or some other water activity. So I understand what they were thinking. Because it was interesting. So other people would come down occasionally, we'd take them fishing, and some people just, they didn't know how to fish. So they didn't understand. And so you'd tell them different things. You'd teach them about fishing. So now you've got a carpenter who walks up to a group of fishermen and says, "Let down the net on the other side of the boat." And they're thinking, "Seriously? We've been fishing all night long. This is what we do for a living. All night we've been fishing. We've caught nothing. This is not going to work." But what? "But because you said so, we'll let down the net." And they found out that it did work. But I'm telling you, that's yielding. That's submitting to. That's a group of men who did not want to do what they were asked to do, but that wasn't the issue. They did it because they knew that it was the right thing to do to demonstrate respect to Jesus Christ as the one who was leading them. When Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, we sometimes act like it just wasn't any big deal for him to go give up his life. He pleaded with God, please, if there's some other way we can do this, if there's any other way. And then he said what? I don't want to do this. Now, he didn't say it that way, did he? He said, not my will, but your will be done. That's exactly the same thing. This is not my will. This is me submitting to your will. He's saying, as a man, I'm not choosing this because I want to do this. I'm choosing this because you have led me this direction. It's the right thing to do. And so he says, not my will, but yours. That's the submission. Follow his lead. It's what causes him to feel that kind of respect. When you're dealing with the whole idea of submission, that lining up under, it's important to recognize there is nothing that brings more glory to God than proper filling of our roles. What is not glorifying God is when you've got one unit, a husband and wife, which have become one. There's a new entity. You're no longer thinking in terms of separateness, even though you're still two individuals. It's one unit that you're focused on. Nothing more unglorifying than to watch one unit that's constantly trying to go two different directions. That's absolutely unglorifying. I mean, when the head directs the body and the body follows what the head is telling it to do, we think that's the way it's supposed to work. But we know what it is. If the brain is sending signals that the body doesn't follow, which happens sometimes physically, we understand that, then we say that's the abnormal way. It's normal. It's glorifying to submit. And so women need to understand. Appreciate that desire. Appreciate his desire to analyze and counsel. God gave him that desire to solve. When he gets that incoming communication that says, Houston, there is a problem, there's a reason. Why? Because God's created him to be the one who's leading to solve. How do you do that? Sometimes my wife, even though she didn't really ask for me to solve something, sometimes when I would say, you know what, here's what you probably should have tried today, she would sit there patiently and accept because she knew that was a need of mine. If all I was ever going to get was problems that I never got a chance to solve, I can't feel completed in that. I can't. And so she understood. He's got to analyze. He's got to solve. Sometimes she would say, not looking for a solution here, just want to vent. And so I could just, I got to tell you, that's a huge help. Now I don't have the respect issues because I understand she's not asking me to solve this issue, so I can just kind of relax and let her vent on that. But sometimes she needed to let me analyze. She needed to let me counsel because God has created me that way. And that's the way that she demonstrates respect to him. So how do you really demonstrate all of that to him? You know, tell him verbally. Write it to him. I would ask a woman this. How many women in here give your husbands cards for things like birthdays, anniversaries, Valentine's Day, things like that? That's not bad. Six women. Wait. Surely there's more than that to give. How do you sign? Somebody tell me how you sign that card. If you don't want, don't be too revealing, but how do you sign that card? Somebody tell me. Would you sign that card? I can tell you how my wife signs everyone. You're used to, anyway. How do you sign it? Do you sign it? Do you let him know who it's from? Or you just give them anonymously or what? Somebody I know signs a card. Somebody tell me how you sign a card. Women? You sign it Georgiana. Any other words along with that? Or, oh, there we go. Love. And you give a name. My wife used to always put, with all my love. Not that I don't appreciate that. How many of you women have ever given your husband a card and says, with my utmost respect, and signed your name? Why? Because you know what? Women would think, that is the most uncaring thing you could possibly put in a card. But it isn't the love men are looking for. It is the respect. If a woman just wrote a line that just said, you know what? You know, she just wrote something that said, I appreciate so much the effort you put into providing for this family. I respect you for that and sign it. I've never met a man that wouldn't appreciate that. That men appreciate that. It signifies. I tell him I appreciate his work. I appreciate what he does. I was studying with one couple, and we were studying their financial troubles. You want to talk about a way to disrespect a husband? She says, you know what? You need to get a second job. Now I got to tell you, that was probably true. He either needed to get a second or a different job because they were barely making ends meet, and they didn't have a high lifestyle. It wasn't like they could cut back a lot of places. Some man, tell me, what do you hear in that particular statement? I'm sorry, what? I'm not doing enough. Now, that's not what she meant. She didn't mean you're not providing. You're a bad provider, that you're not supplying to this family, that you don't do the things you need to do. But that's exactly what he heard. You know, think about the things that we're saying. We need to demonstrate respect. Tell him how much we respect. How much we respect what he's done with the kids. How much we appreciate his strength in being able to lead. How much we appreciate the project that he finished and how he takes care of things like that. How you may appreciate the way that he solved or helped you solve that particular issue with the children. Sometimes just letting him fix things is the way we demonstrate respect. He needs to feel that it's going to be an expression of confidence. Secondly, he needs to feel that it's going to be a life filled with admiration. You know, we talk about women and compliments. Admiration for men is very similar. They need compliments, normally for different things. Most men aren't looking for their wives to say, you know what, you look really cute in that pair of pants. My wife said to me the other day, she goes, you were up in the pulpit and you were preaching. She said, I thought you just looked darling. I thought, are you kidding? Throw that outfit out. I don't ever want to look darling again in the pulpit. She meant that as a compliment. But that's not what I'm looking for. You know, I'm not even really, because most men don't, you know, most men don't need that confirmation. You know, we've got that, you know, as I mentioned to somebody last night, we've got that Fonzarelli complex. You know, most of it doesn't matter. We could put on 30 pounds, still, you know, pull the coat back, look in the mirror and think, hey, not bad. We're okay. We don't need you to tell us how good we look. That's not what we're looking for. He's looking for admiration in other ways. Who he is, what he's doing, how he's performing in life, how he's taking care of the family. And if you think that's not true, I would ask you to explain one phrase that is prevalent among men. You the man. Just think about that. A group of guys can be together and one of them slaps the other one on the shoulder and says, you the man. And he says, no, you the man. And he slaps him on, you know, and then somebody. But I'll tell you, whoever goes out of the room, having been declared by his peers the man, holds his head up high. Because it's an acknowledgement. It's why men gravitate toward work. Because his boss is telling him, you know what, good job. His boss, he's not interested in his boss telling him how wonderful he looks, but his boss says, good job. You did a good job with that. Glad you took care of that project. He feels good about that because he is driven to success because God created him to be driven to success. Is it the admiration that is his greatest need? No, it is respect that is his greatest need. And this becomes indicative of that. So the words that we use mean a big thing. You know, pleasant words are a honeycomb, but harsh words pierce like a sword. There are some things that you can say sometimes that are just, they're just detrimental, that are just crushing to somebody. You know, that you need to get a second job was, how do you think that guy felt at the table? I mean, he just felt absolutely crushed by that. Not only that his wife said it, but she said it in the presence of somebody else. What does he feel like now with me as one of his fellow males who's now looking at this guy thinking, wow, your family doesn't think you provide for them? You know, even though I do that frequently in counsel with people and study, and I understood the meaning of was not what he was taking it as, I knew he took it that way. The way you word things, the things that you say, little things. Women, you know, men talk about women nagging. Women say, I don't nag. Men say, you do nag. You know, we may not tell them that, but that happens a lot of different ways. When a wife says something like, you know, you still didn't take care of such and such. Now, she thinks she's just being informative. The man's perceiving that differently. It depends on what's the urgency of it. You know, explain to him why it has to be done by a certain time. If you tell him the same thing twice, he thinks, why are you telling me again? I know you told me I needed to get that done. You didn't tell me I had to get it done by Tuesday at 2. So, you know, he's got it in the schedule somewhere. He perceives it differently. You can say little words that irritate or that cause that. The same as with Judy and I can tell you there have been numerous times that I've been talking to her, and it's not the words that I've chosen. She said, you're raising your voice. And I can tell you, almost every time I thought, man, I wish I had a tape recorder running. Because I could stop it, push the rewind, push the play button, say, there you go. I'll prove to you I'm not raising my voice. Problem is, I'm lucky I never had a tape recorder because if I played it, I'd probably have to say, ooh, wow, I was raising my voice. My perception was never that I was raising my voice. But her perception was, and it doesn't matter what my perception is. If she perceives it, it's reality. If she thinks I'm treating her unlovingly, then she, that's reality to her, and I need to respond to that. If I think she's treating me disrespectfully, then it's how I perceive it that is the issue. And even though she thinks what she said was not disrespectful, it may have been. And so it needs to be a life that we understand the words that we use are absolutely key. And Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says the tongue has the power over life and death. I mean, just a simple word said. Think about that. Think of the power of a single word. Doctor comes out, you're in the waiting room. The doctor comes out and says, it's malignant. Do you think that one word doesn't have an impact? I mean, one word and it can change your life. If he comes out and says, it's benign, it can just absolutely lift all the burden off, can't it? A judge who says guilty changes the life of somebody, not guilty, changes the life. It doesn't take much of a word. And so as husbands and wives are talking, and as wives especially are thinking in terms of respecting my husband, think about the things that you're saying to him. He likes the flirtatious nature. He likes to feel that you are complimenting him on who he is, helping him to feel good about himself. Because if what he's feeling from you is that he's not succeeding, he doesn't feel admired in the role that he's in. He's going to feel disrespected, and it will have effect. I don't know if you've ever read Dr. Emerson Eggerich's book, Love and Respect. He talks about some of those things, and he talks about the crazy cycle, because here's what happens. When he says something that's unloving or acts unloving toward his wife, she becomes less respectful of him and acts less respectful of him, which causes him to become more unloving, which causes her to become more disrespectful. And he creates what he calls this crazy cycle, and that's what happens. I need to do what I can to make sure I'm demonstrating only love toward my wife and she doing what she can to demonstrate only respect toward me. And the word she chooses, the admiration that she shows, means something. When my wife, you know, when my wife tells somebody, this is what Mark did, you know, man, I appreciate that. This is what he does for us as a family. You think that doesn't make a difference to the man? When the wife holds her husband up in front of somebody else as having been fulfilling of his role, he feels very respected by his wife, and that's what he's looking for. And then thirdly, and this is the question that women probably have the most difficult time understanding, especially as it relates to the subject of respect. He wants to know, is life with you going to be sexual? Men and women view that differently, and God made us differently in several different ways. Men are not all dogs. You know, when I've heard people use that expression. Men are just all dogs. That's all they think about is the physical side of the relationship. Who gave them that drive? That's God-given. Man didn't invent sex. God invented the sexual relationship. God's the one that put the drive in the man to desire the relationship sexually. He intended that it be fulfilling. He intended that it be pleasurable. It actually accomplishes something in the life of a man. Most women would not think in terms of that I'm disrespectful to my husband when this part of our relationship is not correct. But men understand that it is a lack of appreciation, a lack of desire, a lack of respect for. If she truly respected me the way that she would want to be with me the way that I want to be with her. We view that entirely differently. We understand. Men are very visual. Women are not as visual. I used this example one time at one of the lessons I taught and had somebody come up afterwards that I'll explain to you. But I said, here's a great example of this. Here's how the difference in the visual nature of men and women. A man walks into the bathroom as the husband and wife are getting ready to go somewhere. She steps out of the shower. And so now he sees his wife. I can tell you that men are immediately attracted. It doesn't matter that they've got to be somewhere in 15 minutes. It's still, there's an attraction. There's a visual attraction. He's thinking in terms of the intimate side of the relationship. And even maybe thinking in terms of, you know, how much time do we have before we have to leave? Is there a possibility of intimacy before we leave? She walks in the room, sees him step out of the shower. She's thinking, better stand on the mat. We just waxed the floor. I don't want you to slip and fall. You know, I just cleaned the bathroom. I understand that's an exaggeration, but I had a lady come up to me afterwards who said, I have to tell you, on Sundays, I have to get dressed in the closet because I know that we're in danger if he sees me getting dressed. And I thought, that's just so funny. I mean, it just indicates there is a visual impact, and women need to understand that. Why is that important? Because men are looking for a woman who presents herself visually. That, you're going to see, is not only something that we desire, it is something that God created in us as well. You need to understand, and I would tell you, I changed this. I forgot to change it on this slide. I've changed this in my later presentations. It is his need. Here's what I'd rather you put in there. It is his need. It is your privilege. It's more than a duty. You don't act just out of duty. It is your privilege to fulfill your husband that way. God says in 1 Corinthians 7, when Paul is talking to those brethren, he says, understand something. Your body is his body is yours. You don't possess it just for yourself. You own your body in order to help fulfill your mate. And he is looking for that in a relationship. We understand. Sometimes we can't see why the difference. I don't understand why my wife needs to have me tell her I love her repeatedly over and over and over again for 34 years. Doesn't matter that I understand why. She needs that. She may not be able to understand why sexually I have a different need and desire than she does. It doesn't matter if she understands why. Is sex man's greatest need? No. It is indicative of his greatest need, which is respect. And she needs to understand that it is a microcosm of marriage. When I counsel with couples, and not just me, pick up a book on marriage issues and conflict in marriage. The top three issues that are argued about in all marriages, across the board, every time you see a poll, there are three things. What do you think those are? I'm sorry, what? Did you say fight? Oh, finances. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. Finances makes the top three every time. What else? I'm sorry, what? Oh, my study. Intimacy, the sexual side of the relationship. Top three every time. Normally tops the list. Normally tops the list, but always the top three. Children's the other one. Issues of children, whatever they may be. But it's just, those are the top three across the board. In-laws makes number four normally. It really does. In-laws makes number four. You know, that's the great description to help you understand that. The guy says, this is the perfect definition of mixed emotions. I watched my mother-in-law driving off a cliff in my brand new car. Hopefully that's not really the relationship. But we have conflict. And conflict over sexual issues is a huge problem. We're going to talk to the men this afternoon about some of the things that creep into men's lives because of that. But I would tell you, if a woman thinks that she is never a contributor to some of the things that men are making regarding bad choices, she's missing the point. She can be a contributor. I'm not saying he, therefore, is excused from bad behavior. But I'm saying he is looking to have a need fulfilled, and if it is not fulfilled, then it matters to him. It is unfair for a woman to say, have eyes only for me, but then fail to yield herself to her husband when he desires to have that intimacy. That's an unfair situation to put him in. Secondly, you cannot neglect him. You can't. I thought it was interesting. I thought in terms of timing. How would my wife feel if I went 3 weeks without speaking to her? How do you think she'd feel about that? You ever think about that? I mean, doesn't that sound like that'd be a terribly cruel thing to do? I'm just going to go 3 weeks. I'm not even going to talk to her. Why? Because talking is her greatest need? No. It's indicative of her greatest need, that need to be loved and secure and connected. That's why she talks. That's why she wants to talk. And so to ignore the fact that she wants to talk for 3 weeks, I mean, doesn't that just seem like it would be cruel? But it's interesting. We don't think in the same terms of it may be very easy for a wife to not fulfill her husband sexually for 3 weeks and not think it's going to have the same effect on him. It'd be a rare occasion that it does not. Most men would understand, and they get progressively more and more in need of that kind of fulfillment. Interesting, as you look at some of the things that men say. Here's a couple quotes from some of the men as we've looked at some of the interviews. He wants to feel desired. That's why I've changed that from your duty. You know, if the man feels like my wife is just submitting to me sexually because it's her duty, he's not going to feel respected in that. But he says, I wish that my wife understood that making a priority of meeting my intimacy needs is the loudest and clearest way she can say you're more important to me than anything else in the world. Isn't that interesting that that would be a man's approach? He wants to feel value to her like she feels to him. And so he's saying, do you really value me? If you would just understand that fulfilling this need makes me understand how valuable I am to you. Goes on to say, it is a form of communication that speaks more forcefully and with less room for misinterpretation than any other. There's no question as to the nature of submission, the nature of the relationship, the nature of the respect when it is the intimate side of the relationship. He wants to be desired. He doesn't just want the physical act. He wants to genuinely be desired by his wife. That becomes critical. I would tell wives, you really need to understand it. It does several things. If you'll talk to men who say that part of their life is very fulfilling, they will tell you it's a recharging for the man. When he feels exhausted at work and feels pressure at work, there's a recharging that goes with that part of the relationship. Why? Because it is a drive that God has given him. It is a drive that he's able to fulfill with his wife, and therefore he feels we've been able to accomplish something. I feel very respected in that. Getting wives to understand, respond more often. The same as I need to, way more often than I used to do. I make a concerted effort to just walk up and hold hands with my wife. And just make an effort to walk up. And I want her to show, you know why I'm doing this? I'm not doing this just because God tells me to. I'm doing this because there's nothing more that I want to do in life than fulfill you. I mean, outside of my relationship with God. This is the relationship on earth that means the most and is the best demonstration of how I'm fulfilling my relationship with God. And so I may just walk up and put my arms around her. May just hold her. May just ask her, say, why don't you come over here and sit beside me on the couch? Just would like to hold you close. And I do that. Why? Because it's my natural inclination? It's not. But I know it's her need, and there's nothing I would rather do than help fulfill her need. Women need to understand, I need to respond more often. I need to initiate the sexual relationship. Men feel greatly respected when they don't have to ask for that relationship, but the woman initiates that relationship on some occasion so that he feels like, you know what, she's desirous of this the same way I'm desirous. It's very fulfilling for him as well. Never, ever, ever use it as a means of accomplishing what you want. You can't deprive in order to get something. You want to talk about feeling disrespected? Tell your husband, you know what, we can be intimate if... He will feel remarkably disrespected. It is very much a microcosm of the marriage relationship. One of the verses that we'll look at, and I'll just use it here, but one of the verses we'll look at in the men's session this afternoon, this shows you, this isn't just my idea. God says, let her breast satisfy you. He doesn't say that to the woman about the man, but he does to the man. Look at her. Appreciate sexually what she is, that she looks different than you, that you appreciate that. That's God created us that way and told us that we should appreciate that she is a sexually appealing person. Why would he do that if he didn't intend it to be a fulfillment of our relationship? And I would say that's why I've approached these lessons a little differently in the last couple of years or so. I think there are as many women who miss the real import of that fact as there are men who miss the import of the things they're supposed to be doing. Your husband wants to have those three questions answered. It's going to be a life of confidence. It's going to be a life of admiration. It's going to be a life of sexual expression or fulfillment. He will feel respected when those parts of his life are fulfilling. He goes on to say, she doesn't understand how even her occasional dismissals make me feel less desirable. I can't resist her. I wish that I too were irresistible. She says that I am. I love this quote by this guy. I wish that I were irresistible. She says that I am, but her ability to say no so easily makes it hard to believe. I can tell you, men feel that. If you wives think men don't ever feel that, they do. The wife says you're very desirable, but the man says, if I am so desirable, how is it that you could so easily say no? They do feel that. It's important, I think, to recognize that it is such a strong part of the marriage relationship. We thank you so much for your attention. This doesn't really do anything except just give us some tools. It doesn't solve the problems. The problems are solved because we take this information home. And husbands and wives talk. And they say, you know what, honey? I want to be a better husband. And I need you to help me understand how I can better demonstrate love to you. And then he seeks to fulfill that. And she says, I want to be the most respectful wife that I can possibly be. Please help me understand the things you're looking for that would make you feel most respected so that the two can work, not on changing the other, because you can't do that anyway. You'll find that out sooner or later in marriage and in other places. You can't change anybody else. They can change them. You can lead them to change. You can help them understand what needs to be changed, but they have to change them. So the only person that can change Mark in our marriage is Mark. The only person that can change Judy is Judy. And if I'm working to change Mark and she's working to change Judy, our marriage grows every day. And that's a great blessing. Thank you guys so much for your attention. I don't know if there's some other closing announcements that need to be taken care of in the prayer.